Hello, everyone. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh, and here we are again at our second podcast in a row. It's incredible, but we've actually pulled this off 2 weeks in a row. But there's a lot of suspense building because you're all probably wondering what we're going to call this. And by us, I mean, of course, my brother, my friend, the inimitable William Alexander. Hey, Will, how the hell are you?
Hey, Wayne, it's good to see you, man. Although nobody else can know that I can see you, but it's good to hear from you.
We look great right now, in case you're wondering. The lighting's perfect. Yeah. We got great clothes, the whole thing. Yeah.
The bodies and the face for podcasts.
Exactly. Great face for radio. Anyway, Will, we have something exciting to announce. You have a contest winner for the name of our podcast.
Yep.
And I believe the winner hailed from Lake Wobegon. Lake Wobegon, yeah. And what is that name for the podcast, Will?
Well, they came up with a great name. It's the Dog Show Drive with Wayne Cavanaugh, Will Alexander.
I like it, Will. I like it. The Dog Show Drive.
Dog Show
with
Drive.
Wayne Cavanaugh and Will Alexander. That's what you're going to get to hear right here for free. It's America. It's a beautiful thing. And we're the lucky ones because we get to hang out with each other. So enjoy the ride. Anyway, our goal is to give you something to do as you're driving to the dog shows. So we hope to release it on, say, Thursdays. So you have it for your drive and it will be the Dog Show Drive. But we do want to hear from you, your ideas, your thoughts, and whatever else is on your mind that is dog show related.
Yeah, you can send it to me for now. You can send it to dogshowtips@gmail.com. But eventually we're going to have a Dog Show Drive email set up. We just haven't gotten that far. We're both very busy.
We're very busy men. Very busy men. I had to plant gardens. We have a house that we're selling in Maryland. So I spent the day putting in those things that grow. Plants, bushes, things like that. And I went to the nursery, not where you get like baby stuff, but where they grow the, you know, the plants. And I asked her what grew here soon, because we want to sell the house quick. I want blooms. And she gave me something that ended with vowels and cost a lot of money. So I figured they must be good. So I planted them and I'm hoping that the house sells quickly before they die, because I planted them wrong. But we'll see how it goes. But I did end up, I got that all done so I could watch the Irish Wolfhound webinar.
Oh, good.
Which was really interesting. It's a breed I love and own. So it was really fun.
Who was that
guy?
Who did that?
It was Jamie Bartlett-Souza, who was terrific. Mm-hmm. And Jocelyn Gagne, who was just, she was brilliant. And
I love Jocelyn. Yeah. She's one of my favorite people up here.
See, we try to keep things both sides of the border, right? Because Jocelyn's from Canada as well.
Yeah.
As well. So there you have it. But it's an interesting way to learn, you know? It's a breed that I'm familiar with. I think, you know, I'm in the quest to gather those elusive points, those CEU points.
So this was a webinar the AKC put out, and those were the presenters then.
That's right. And the AKC has a person who does this, and she puts them up and she monitors the technology part and all that. I think they're worth 1 point, and you need 10 for each breed.
I've heard some really good things. I know a lot of the judges up here watch them all the time.
Yeah, some of them are just great, you know, and it depends a lot. You know, some of the clubs have done more than others as far as technology goes. But if you really want to learn and you've done your homework before the webinar, if you're thinking you're going to sit there and the webinar is going to teach you about the breed, you're never going to get it. But if you've done your homework previously, you can really learn a lot. I'm always willing to learn from anybody. And these two had great experience in the breed. So it was really fun to look. The pictures were great.
I haven't seen much of Jamie's dogs other than pictures, but I've been firsthand with Jocelyn's dogs. And he's had some incredible dogs that I've loved over the years. So
beautiful shape, right? Just, you know, I think that when I watch them being judged sometimes, I wonder if everyone that's judging them or observing them understands the sight hound, you know, and it's a sight hound shape. And describing that, you know, when you say rough coated greyhound, which is in the standard and that is the shape, I throw
most
some people
don't
off.
Know that, you know, it's amazing. No. Most people don't know that.
I remember my vet, who's a pretty good dog man, he was surprised when I said, by the way, doc, this is a sighthound when you're treating this dog. You know that, right? No idea.
I hate to say it. I was in the ring one time and there was a beautiful bitch being shown and she didn't place. And I shook my head and outside the ring were some judges that were watching. And the one said, well, I don't like her top line. I said, that was the best thing about her. Her shape was the best thing about her. And you picked on her for that. So
yeah,
they weren't judging, obviously. They were just watching. I don't even think they were hound judges, right. But they, it's just something I think people need to know. And
yeah, when you know, this giant commanding thing, which is obviously essential, this great size commanding performance. I think that sometimes throws people off and they get hung up. Yes, they're supposed to be. I mean, that's an essential ingredient, this commanding performance and look in the ring. But it doesn't mean they can't hold the shape of a sighthound. And long neck into a long back, just slightly off square, but the back is not a short back. And the tuck up fools people, they should have plenty. It's the shape of a sighthound.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But maybe it's because there's not giant entries except at nationals where you get hundreds and hundreds.
Right.
I think it's a misunderstood breed. And when you see some good ones, you see a lot of great Dane ones winning, a lot of flat boxy headed.
And you see, because they'll be the only ones in the shows and they're very attractive animals. And you said, what do you say? Command performance or perform? How do you
commanding pronounce? Performance? Commanding. Great size command.
The famous dog beer called command performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of what
that was the standard poodle Franks, right?
Oh, is that, but I think there was a wolfhound up here named that too. So, can't remember who had it, but I want to say there was one.
Yeah, a commanding appearance is probably the words in the standard, but it's a breed that does command the ground they're over, as long as they're over enough ground. Short back, they're long and low. Long, yes. Long and low, no. But beautiful breed, and I love mine. He's the coolest dog I've ever had. What a adventure owning a wolfhound! I can tell you that it is. It's actually probably taught me more about sighthounds than anything.
Well, I've enjoyed the breed too. I've shown a few of them. And I remember visiting a kennel one time and the place was quiet and she made one sound and they all popped their heads. It was like Jurassic Park. It was like these was quiet and all of a sudden, boom, 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 all these heads looking at me. I'm like, woo. But it was incredible. It was like a giant, it was like a room full of cats almost, but they were wolfhounds. You never even knew they were there until they wanted you to know they were there.
Yeah. Well, we see shape the same. I know when you and I see a wolfhound, we it's true of most breeds with us, but it's a beautiful thing when you get to see a good one, and they're quite a thing to live with. Now, so this gathering of my article, depending on when this podcast is edited and ready to go, my article coming up in the next Canon Chronicle is in part discusses what you go through to get additional breeds, and I think it's important because, it's kind of like people talk about the AKC and have their complaints, but when I ask them who the chairman is or to name three board members, they have no idea. And it's, we're looking for who's the major going to hold this weekend and who's judging. I get that. But sometimes we should understand as a sport what a judge goes through to get an additional breed. There's lots of requirements in this new, it's not that new. I think it's 2 years old and then with some adjustments, this new judge's approval process called the policy officially. But one of the things I talk about in the article and which I'd like to talk about here, Will, is those outliers, those people that we know, that you and I know very well, that may not be good at test taking.
Right.
That may be not comfortable with computers. I mean, if you've worked in dogs all your life, maybe computers wasn't a big thing for you. And you're taking a lot of tests. There's tests for everything. There's tests for every breed. There's tests for procedures, which there should be, and tests for anatomy. And these are good things, I'm not saying that. Most people would have the testing skills and the computer skills, but not everybody. And it's expensive. It's not a big deal for me or a lot of people, but when you start adding up $35 a test and 50 for a breed course online, that's 85. And that's just the price of admission, because then you've got to go find ways to get your 10 points. Trips to nationals, that could be $1,000 easy.
Oh, easy.
Kennel visits, driving seminars. A regular seminar is a point, but if you go to the advanced seminars, you get more points, or the national seminars. But you got to get there. And you're talking about airfare. So when you're applying for, say, a 32 group breed, it's possible to spend $20,000.
Yeah, it's incredible to think about that. I can't imagine having to spend that kind of money on doing that.
And like, time.
But it answers a lot of questions why some people aren't judges.
Right. Right.
What is this, the policy? That's what they call this, the policy, the new.
Yeah, instead of calling it the judging approval process, it always says known as the policy.
With a capital. Sounds like a John Grisham novel, doesn't it? With Tom Cruise.
And as well as it's thought out, I don't think there's a great solution, but I do worry how many people we have out there that, you know, maybe they've been in the sport. Well, actually, you got to have a lot of years in you, right? So a lot of these people are adults, seniors, or whatever you want to call us. And when it comes to those limitations of test-taking skills, computer skills, travel time, the ability to travel and get around, how many people are we leaving on the sidelines?
Oh, for sure.
And how many people are just maybe even, I don't want to say ashamed, but unwilling to take the chance to fail?
Oh, I know. And there's been some very prominent people that I know that failed their first test.
Yes.
And it was hard on them. You know, they didn't want to do it again.
Yep. I know a great judge who failed the breed test 3 times. These are open book tests, by the way.
Yeah.
They're open book tests. That does not mean it's a slam dunk. People fail them all the time. I don't know. There's always a trick question or two, which kind of just makes me wonder.
Yeah. Why the trick question?
But I can see that taking the test makes you read the standard over and over again, which is a good thing for everybody. But what do you think about, what can we do for these people that are outliers, Will, that can't quite meet those criteria or are intimidated by it? You look at this chart, this matrix, which has just, it's like a big mileage chart with all these cross things and points and stuff. That alone may be foreboding for some people.
Sure.
What can we do to get those people? We need judges, right? I mean,
I think we talked about it last time. I think we talked about the interview process. I think that's a way to at least personalize it.
Yeah.
For these people that can't take tests, and we need to actually find out, because I know right away with some people that I would let buy me a dog that don't want to be a judge, you know, and that's really hard on our sport. Our sport needs those people, and needs the ones that actually have the eye.
Yeah, we do. And there's probably people that don't get spotlight because of the area of the country where they live. You know, and I'm sure you know some people in a non less populated areas of Canada that are great dog people that probably just aren't out there enough or don't have distance enough to get to all these places where they need to get. You know, if you're a judge from the middle of the country and you can't get to enough nationals and shows, you know, that alone. I mean, if you live on the East Coast, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic states, you can probably get to enough nationals by driving there in a day and, you know, coming back. But not necessarily, depending on where you live.
Back years ago when we didn't have as much of our process as we do now and people got their license easier, we'd have remote areas where these judges would be, they would come into these remote areas and they were almost all breed judges. And you'd watch them and think, how the heck did this get to be? But then you go to their area and you see, well, they don't get to see a lot of depth. They might get to see one good dog in a group. And so it's hard for them to get a grasp of the whole feeling of a sporting group or a feeling of a strong hound group. You know, they it's easy to find one or two dogs that stand out. But like, I remember a friend of mine moved down east years ago. This is years ago. And he came back and he said, I don't feel as bad about some of these judges now that I used to pick on, because it's not their fault. They just didn't get to see them, didn't get to. Like, and that was before they had to travel and do the seminars. They just wrote a test, right?
Right, right. Well, I think there's, you know, it really does, you kind of, you know, working for the Forsythes, like I did, and working for people like you did, we really got to see great dogs growing up. We got those templates. But there's got to be some sort of way. What I was thinking about is, first of all, I think the policy is really good. It's detailed. It lets you know what you have to do, and the information is there. There's plenty of resources where you can go learn on your own.
Yep.
With that said, it's a real easy system to abuse, because all you have to do is make believe you're sitting there. You don't have to want to learn anything. We've all been to those seminars. I was to one, actually it was a Wolfhound seminar 3 years ago. Jim Edwards and I went down when he was alive. And I sat in the seminar. Jill Breggy gave it, and she was really good. She put so much work into this presentation. There was about seven or eight of us, and it was all day. And by lunch, that was our first break. I was the only one that had asked questions or comments, the only one.
That's for just checking boxes.
Right. We got back from lunch, and this guy raised his hand, and I thought, oh, wow, question. And his question was, when do we get our certificates? And I was so upset for her, for Jill and for the breed. Ends up this guy had two groups, was just a few breeds away from getting his third group. And I sat next to him at the mentors group at ringside, and he just didn't get it. And I don't think he cared, you know? So you can just go out and you can be real good at collecting CEUs, and get your approvals, or you can be real bad at taking tests, not having money and not having computer skills, and be left out in the dust. There's got to be some way to bring these two systems together. What do you think, besides the interview process? What do you think? What kind of teams would you put together for that? How would you do that?
God, I don't know, Dana. I've done some work up here on the Confirmation Council, and
how does it work?
Pardon me?
How does it work there?
It works basically the same way. We have some mentoring. You have to do some kennel visits, and it's the same open book test. But we do half a group at a time. We don't just get breeds.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that Michael was on the right track with the interview process of it all.
Which Michael?
Michael Hill. Michael Woods. Dr. Michael Woods.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was the one that suggested that. Now, it was just suggestions. We were just talking about things, mm-hmm. and we all agreed. It was myself and Jeannie Line and Thora Brown and Dr. Michael Woods. And I really think that would be the way to go, at least up here. I really do. I think it would be a way to go.
I was thinking about sort of a combined system where you left the current policy in place. You maybe make some tweaks, but because I think it is good. But maybe you have exception panels where in different regions of the states, you have, you know, three, you know, respected judges, veteran judges that, and you don't want to give them a thankless job. You want the AKC to coordinate it somehow, but maybe if they see someone or something suggested that person would apply to the AKC for an exception interview. And once that's approved, if it's approved, you can't just get a skate around. You got to try the system first. But then they could set up a process of interviewing with those panels.
That's a good idea. Exception interview.
Yeah. And then the exception interview would be their kind of like a trial board, right? Their recommendations would be sent to the board. They wouldn't say yes or no. They'd send their recommendations to the board, who would then take in consideration all aspects and the policy and see if maybe there is a way that they could make some sort of exceptions for those people. And some of them are obvious. When Peter Green wanted the Terrier group, there was one question he should have been asked at his interview. when can you start?
Yeah, that's good. That's right.
Right.
I agree. Did you hear about Tennessee this week?
I did. I saw pictures. What a mess.
I saw the videos. Yeah. Rebecca Cross posted a bunch of videos. They were terrifying, actually. There was one where she was driving along and she was filming her feet in the passenger side of the van. And the van was filling up with water, like it covered her feet.
You know, we have, and I don't care what people believe, but I think it's pretty obvious that we have more severe weather events lately. Whatever causes it, it's
no question.
But it happens. It's happening more and more. And
Al Gore's fault.
Yeah. but we're dealing with COVID cancellations. We're dealing with weather cancellations. We're dealing with so many things that we didn't have to think about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I don't know. Maybe there's going to have to be some. I think the AKC has done a good job of adjusting quickly to making these calls in some cases. And there's room for, you know, more creative thinking going forward if these things are going to keep occurring. But
before COVID, I can only remember one show up in Canada ever being canceled. The same idea. It was a show held in a park and it had a bad rainstorm and the river flooded the park and they canceled the show. And they got all the breed judging done, then canceled the show. So I went around and asked all the group judges if they had given me the breed, if they would have placed my exhibit in the group because I wanted to be able to charge the bonus. Sure. Would you have placed the cocker in the group? You know, it was a pretty good group.
Take ads out in the magazines. Right?
There was one.
I would have won this one.
One show, there was a bunch of independent specialties and the Rottweiler specialty kept going on during the storm.
Oh, geez.
And I was showing in it because normally I wouldn't have made the Rottweiler probably during the regular show. Send so-and-so over because I would have
been a little busy.
But that's all that was left. So I went to show it. And this was the biggest Rottweiler in captivity. I've never seen one this big. And we won the national specialty. I think it was all due to the water because he was in 6 inches of water. So he didn't look as huge as he had. And when the judge pointed at me, Wayne, the lead snapped and I had a hold of his head. And the judge is pointing to me as I'm holding onto his head. And we're soaked. We're both soaked. And I blame that dog for my rotator cuff because someone threw something to bait their dog and he pulled me into the water.
Yeah. I remember when one of our buddy handlers said he was stuck in a ring somewhere and he said, can you show this rod? And I said, yeah, sure. And I walked into the ring and when I walked in the ring, people fled for the corners. They were diving at, I had 100 feet on each side of me. So I turned and looked at someone at ringside that I knew that had working dogs. And I said, what's up with this? Oh, that dog. And I remember his name too. You don't want him near any of the other dogs. I said, well, then I don't want to be near him. Can I ask to leave? No, you have to stay there. But yeah, you know, and by the way, let's make it clear. Some of the coolest, most wonderful dogs ever met in my life are Rottweilers.
Oh yeah,
you do get the odd one out in every breed. That happened to me with an English Cocker too. So it didn't be anything.
Yeah, they just get a bad rap sometimes. That's, yeah,
they do.
I
hate to go into these things. We'll just do it briefly. But you got to tell. There's got to be more Rottweiler stories without a leash. There's got to be some more stories when you're stuck in the ring and not embarrassing moments, which they are embarrassing, but moments that you didn't plan for.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I'm sure there's a million of them.
Any beagles that didn't like black dogs, Will?
Yeah. One time I had the beagle bitch, your beagle bitch, in the group somewhere. Judge made the cut in the group and she was in the cut. And as he said, take the round one at a time. And as he said that, there was an Afghan there. It was a black Afghan and it screamed. Well, P didn't like black dogs and she didn't like noises. So every hackle went up on her back and she had like four top lines because the hackle all over. She short strided herself so bad because she was marching around because she was so mad. And the judge who had already put her up gave her second. And he said to me, what happened? I said, she wanted to kill the Afghan. So she another judge who will remain nameless leaned over and said, would have done the breed a favor.
It's a lot of, I don't know, maybe it's not a beagle thing, but I've seen it happen more than once with mine. I remember a long time ago, you were showing a dog for me, Banjo.
Yep.
You were showing, and you called and said, hey, I just won the group. And I said, who's in best in show? And you assumed I was thinking, okay, who can we beat? I wasn't thinking that at all. And when you got to Newfoundland, I'm like, okay, now I got to tell you something here, Will. You hang on when that Newfoundland goes down and back.
I think one time in Canada, we had won the group, and it might have been Banjo too. And we were stuck between the Black Cocker, because in Canada, they put them in group order.
Right.
The fourth group was a Black Cocker, so I'm in, and the Newfoundland won the work group. I was stuck between two. He was going to explode.
Oh, wow. He was a great little dog. He was a great little dog. Not many people. This is a dog that my wife bought me for Christmas without me knowing. What happened was I was judging Cleveland. It was the last show of the year. And there were two buddies of mine that each had setters, and it was tied for who was going to be number one sporting dog. And it was going to kind of be up to me. And I didn't want that at all. Fortunately, they're just such good guys. They split one other way. So they ended up in a tie for top dog, which is a really beautiful, beautiful thing to do, I thought. Two guys that really respected the sport and each other. And anyway, so when I came home, Cheryl said, what'd you do with the setters? And I told her. And I said, but there was a beagle that I really fell in love with. He was 6 months and a day. And I gave him best of winners. So why didn't you give him the variety? And I said, well, you couldn't touch him. The owner walked in and she was like, she just was there and she couldn't touch him. And I thought, he's beautiful. So I said, just here's some, go get some bait from one of your friends or inside. Just stand there and don't do anything. And he stood there. Great. So I gave him best of winners for a major. And then Cheryl, when I told her the story, she went around somehow and found the catalog, got the lady's name, bought the dog, and brought him to me on Christmas. And he was a rogue. And when I told the other handlers, why didn't you buy this dog? They said, because he's tough. We got along great after about a month. And he ended up being one of the most fun dogs I ever had. There was a person that you and I know, Will, and he didn't like that person. He would lift his leg on him and try to bite him and stuff. We're going to leave Doug out of this conversation today. We're not going to mention it.
Well, I remember the first time I took Banjo home, though. I brought him home because we were going to see if Mr. Gear would help us.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Home, and I called Mr. Gear, and Mr. Gear was, he had owned all the beagles for me. And he said, yeah, bring him down. I said, bring him where? To the Dickens. The Dickens was a dog. And I remember walking in there. He said, you want the dog in here? He said, bring him in. And he must have owned the pub because he said, put him down. So I put Banjo down. The door, I made sure the doors were closed. And he ran around. He said, all right, I'll help. He took it. But I took the dog home and I went to groom. I had never trimmed him yet.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd ever put clippers near him either, because when I put clippers near him, he wanted to take those clippers away from me and clip me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I did when I got him, this was the word, his nails were long. So I got him down the kennel and I got him up on the table and I thought, I'm never going to raise my voice. I'm never going to hit him or correct him. The only way to deal with this dog is to last, wait him out.
Yep.
And I was there all day. And by the last foot, he finally just went, there you go. And that was it. Game over. We were fine. But I knew that if I tried to make him do it, it was never going to happen.
But you know that character, I mean, him, the kind of dog that never gave up. He always showed. He never had a bad day.
Oh, man. He was a great dog. Tough He's dog.
I mean, he never had a bad day.
And unfortunately, we didn't try to collect him until he was 13. Stupid. Anyway, those were fun dogs. Now, when we're talking about these show sites and how that's all going in COVID, we're having surges all over the country right now. And we're just getting back in stride. And my daughter was telling me today, their census is full. They can't accept one more COVID patient. And that hasn't happened in months. And we have, you know, we're in a state where anyone over 16 can get in line to get a vaccination now. And 25% of the population has got at least one. So I just don't know what's going to happen. I've got assignments, two in April and one in May, one in June. And I'm wondering if these things are going to start getting cut back again.
Yeah.
And what do we do if they do?
And have you had your shot?
Yeah, I've had both.
You've had both, so you're okay then.
Yeah, Michigan's been great. Cheryl's had both. I've had both. Of course, Haley, working in the hospital, has both. Her husband does. Brody, my son, and his fiance, they both had both because they work.
Yeah, we haven't. I haven't had any. My sister was getting her first one Friday, I think. So.
Yeah, man, what a mess. But the shows that I went, the shows that I've been to, I went to Tallahassee. Everybody was cool. The judges had masks. I didn't see one. You know, one of our fears early on, everyone was saying, we got to train our dog to people with masks.
Yeah.
Either everybody did that or they didn't care because I didn't see any dogs react to masks. And people were good about wearing them. And I'm down in Baltimore right now at my son's house down here. And everybody here walks dogs all over the city and they all wear masks while they're walking their dogs, which is not what they do in Michigan. So at the end of the day, we're going to have to wait a little bit or change our style, but there's going to be dog shows and we just have to be patient.
Oh, no question. No question. And even up here, like I said, we have our first shows coming up soon, but everybody really follows the rules and we actually, handlers all groom in their trucks. We don't even go in grooming areas.
Yeah.
And we just try to social distance as best we can. And it's a pain, but it's not horrible. You know, the things you have to do, you look back and you listen to what my grandparents went through or something, you know, that's nothing where we do now as compared to what they had to go through. So.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother thinks she'll be 100 in a couple of weeks. And she thinks it's hysterical when people complain about putting a piece of cloth on their face after what they went through with the wars and the depression and everything else. Are your shows getting fewer but bigger, like in the States?
Well, we're limiting the size right now because numbers down at the events.
Yeah.
So I think they've limited the shows to 250.
Yeah.
And we're doing two a day. So. We haven't had one yet, so we'll see how it goes. This one's up in northern Ontario, compared to me, closer to the Pembroke area. So we'll see how it goes up there. It's going to be cold, though. It's still going to be cold, and we're going to have to be grooming outside in our trucks. So,
Well, we've got the shows, you know, with those big 3,000 entries that we're having in Florida in the beginning, they're still big shows. It's you know, it's tapering off a little as there are more shows. Now there's not just shows in Florida and Texas. There are shows more popping up in other places, California and Virginia and elsewhere. A lot of specialties have been moved around or canceled too, and that's too bad. Oh, did you hear about Crufts?
Yeah, I heard about Crufts, and that's a shame. You know?
And I just got an email from Westminster too.
What did that say?
No spectators.
Oh, that just came out?
Just came out yesterday, yeah. And only owners, handlers, and people who have a direct connection to the entry.
That's going to be an odd feeling.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, Lyndhurst Outdoors is going to be an odd feeling.
Oh,
but,
for sure.
You know, it's just, and Crufts just canceled, period. And they're not, with Westminster, if you had an assignment in February, you had an assignment is it June or July? June, right?
Yeah.
This summer. It's not so at Crufts. All the judges are losing their assignments. Because they plan so far out that they would have to bump everybody, you know, so many years out. And a lot of the people who judge at Crufts are not 30. So it's a shame. There's just nothing you can do. But well,
they're not having any shows over there right now. Last time I spoke to Gavin or Evan Robertson, they haven't had any shows.
So. Is that right? Yeah. Well, this is going to be, when you think about how international our shows are, right? Especially nowadays, at Westminster, you probably had 30 countries represented, maybe more. And at Crufts, certainly like that, and dogs from all over Europe. So, yeah, I guess there's that you know, the concern about bringing all those people from different countries who are at different levels of these, you know, different protocols for vaccinations and different variations and mutations and all that stuff, stuff we never thought of. Now, with that said, my father would tell me stories when they would go to Philadelphia on Saturday, and the next day in Atlantic City, 700 dogs would be dead because of distemper.
Wow. Jesus.
I mean, think about that. We don't even think about that.
God.
But we had diseases back then in the dogs that would just wipe out a population just like that. You know, we talked about parvo when we all experienced that. That was horrible, but it was nothing like distemper. And some of the things that they put up with before the vaccinations for those diseases were available and invented. So the sportsmen threw a lot. Yeah, the sportsmen threw a lot. And now we whine if our generators can't be turned on. So we need to buck up and be and be tougher. Go in there and show our damn dogs.
Yeah. And maybe I love it now. You look at the generators now, and they have these little almost suitcase generators you can carry around. Yeah. I remember my first generator was a Kubota. It was the biggest monstrous thing I'd ever seen in my life. I remember taking it to Montgomery, and I think it was Peter asked if he could change his generator to my generator. Really? So we'll steal it.
Is this when you had the box truck?
Oh yeah, I had a box. But this thing was a monster, the Kubota. So,
you know, the two things that I wish there should be the dog museum is, it's fantastic, it's beautiful. Yeah, if you haven't been a dog museum and you're in the sport, you've just missed a great amazing opportunity to see the amazing displays and the art there in the library and everything else. But if there's two things that should be in there, it's the Bluebird, the Forsyth's Bluebird bus that we all traveled on. That should be in there for sure. And your box truck. I mean, combine your truck and that Bluebird, they both were used for, I think, 40 years, right? I think you used your truck for 40 years.
I had assistants that were younger than my truck.
That's right.
When I finally retired, I told the guy that has it, I said, you should set up a sign. I said, because people will come, just like the people will come, Vito. They'll come because they'll want the memories to wash over them like a fresh spring rain. They'll gladly give you $5, Vito.
That's right.
Just to walk through the truck.
I remember when you were showing something for me, I thought, can I just buy him new wheels that aren't rusted? Maybe that would give it some sense of, but it would ruin the whole mojo.
I have to tell you, Wayner, I was in Florida waiting to go on the Yukonuma show, the Orlando, what they call it now, the Royal Canin Show. And we're all in line. And we're lined up like a Grateful Dead concert. We're all there all day long. Right? So we all get out of each other's trucks. We're all hanging out with each other. And everybody's talking about their new trucks breaking down. I was with the 20-year-old winner prize, and it was never breaking down.
Yeah, that thing was great. It really was. It was.
You could hear it coming. So.
And of course, it had some incredible and wonderful Toronto Maple Leaf stickers that I can't believe. Did anyone ever mess with those? Put a Calgary Flame sticker over them or anything?
Well, I was always afraid driving through Montreal. I was always afraid. You know?
Yeah.
They take that shit serious.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, you should have had the magnetic ones you could put inside or something. But it is amazing to watch all these new rigs. I remember bringing some friends from Ireland to a show in Indiana, and it's a big flat Valparaiso, a big flat grounds with rings in the middle and just trucks and vans all around it, like surrounding a football field. And there are no spectators. And this is when they were allowed too. He said, where are all the people? And I said, oh, they're all in their trucks all around. And he was amazed that eight in the morning, all of a sudden the doors all started open, the dogs all came out, and then they went back in their trucks. Yeah. Said, this is not a dog show.
Well, and it's amazing, the rigs. Like I remember someone talking about how much they're paying for a rig. And it's, you have to put a mortgage on your rig.
Yeah, I guess to each his own, but
Some of the ones that are on the road all the time, they need that kind of facility. I always felt I like to go to hotels. Park my truck, put the tents up, and go to the hotels and have fresh sheets every day and all those.
Hot shower guaranteed.
Exactly.
Usually guaranteed. I don't have a light in my current hotel bathroom at the moment, but going to make it interesting for a shower to be my cell phone light.
That'd be great.
Should have bought you a generator, Will. I should have bought the Kubota.
I don't even know. I don't know whatever happened to that thing. I'm sure it just died and we rolled it off into a ditch. I remember one time when Adam was working for me, he was lifting it off the back of the truck and he fell. And he was a little, when he started working for me, he was 16. He was little.
Yeah.
And it rolled and we had a bunch of girls working. So he could not let himself.
Oh, that's right. Of course.
Bad in front of the girls. He had that thing. It rolled over. He gets up. I'm okay. But it was a monster.
But you know, I think handlers drive far longer distances than they used to too. We never left New England, you know, with the Forsythes. Why would we?
Oh, exactly. That's what I was trying.
Now you're in Iowa one weekend and Florida the next. And so I guess you need something a little fancier. I don't know. To each his own. Anyway, young William, how was your thing going with your transport?
Oh, busy. I told you last week too. I could drive every day of the week if I wanted to. This week, I think I leave for. I'm busy every day, but I think the long drive is New Jersey this week. So,
what we're talking about here is Will and Doug Belter and others. I guess there's a couple.
Oh, yeah,
In the sport that have provided this incredible service by transporting dogs. It sounds simple, but when you realize the demand, when these guys are getting so much work, people need it, and especially getting dogs across the border, right?
Yep. I tell Dougie I'm the Jason Statham of dog transporters.
That's right.
I asked him. I said, have you seen the Clint Eastwood movie, The Mule?
Well, Doug's as stubborn as a mule, so that would cover that end.
No, he's been great. He introduced this to me, and it's been great.
And by the way, you know, I think that was one of those great dog show friendship things where Doug would hook you up and get this going and thought of you to do it. You know, there's so much of that we take for granted.
Yeah.
If you break down, someone's going to come by.
Oh, exactly. And let's say, I remember breaking down and not in the Winter Prize, before I had the Indestructible Winter Prize. And people that I didn't even get along with would stop.
Right. Exactly. Of course. Yeah. You wouldn't even think twice about it. No. And you certainly wouldn't ask what their political affiliations were, or if they believe in science or not, or if they believed in the pandemic or not. You just help them with their damn flat tire and take care of their dogs and move on.
We were convoying out.
Oop, wrong hat. Not helping you, buddy. No.
You remember John Glover?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
John Glover was, when I was growing up, he was our Superman. He fixed everything. He was one of those guys. And yeah. I always depended on John for stupid things. I remember driving home from a dog show. It was a winter storm and we were sort of convoying, right? And all of a sudden Allison was with me. My wiper stopped. They stopped right in the middle of the windshield. And it was snowing like crazy. Like I couldn't see. So I pulled over and John pulled over and he said, "What's wrong?" I said, "My wipers won't work." And I said, "What are we going to do?" Well, he reached over and he pulled it down and they started up again. Thanks, John.
Yeah, that's a big help, John. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, I think I have to get ready for bed.
After thinking about all that hard time on the road, we're getting tired, right? Anyway, well, this has been great, Will. Appreciate it as always, buddy. Love you. And all our listeners, I think there's at least 7 of you out there because I know my mother's listening. And
my mom has at least 2.
3 of our friends are listening. But
yeah, I know she's checking our speech and seeing if we're saying the words correctly. And what.
That's right. And that's very important. Anyway.
You put an S on anyway. There's no S on anyway, Will.
It's true. William, one more time, tell us about the name of the podcast, Our Winner from Lake Wobegon.
Yes. Yeah.
It is
Dog Show Drive with
Dog Wade. Show Drive. I hear a jingling. I hear a jingle.
There's,
I hear a jingle.
Yeah.
It's up to you, Will. And I know you can do it, buddy. There'll be a jingle. There'll be maybe a logo. Yeah, and all that stuff. But meanwhile, you just have to be crafty enough to find us. And we're going to try our best to tell you where you can find that. And I'd say whatever day today is, they should be up in a week, right, Will?
Yeah. We're hoping to have them up on Thursdays,
yeah,
and for you guys to drive. And I believe Dr. Ernie said they will be on Apple and Spotify, I believe.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. We'll get that stuff out there. And next week, we'll have a jingle. We'll get Lennon McCartney or Gavin on Alexander, and we'll fit a jingle.
Very much the same thing. But all right, bud.
All right, Wiener. Enjoy your shower in the dark, and I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Will. Take care, everybody, and safe driving out there. And I hope you all are winners.
Yeah.
Maybe not this weekend, but eventually you got to win something. Can't lose them all. All right. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the drive.
Yep, safe drive, guys.